I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Go Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves and people who will motivate us and inspire positive change. This podcast is made possible by Sally Hansen, the creator of which was an inspirational woman who promoted the message of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Whether it's a quick tan application or a cuticle oil top-up, Sally Hansen wants us to have the power to feel like our best selves. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I talk to Rosie Connolly. Rosie is not only a businesswoman and a busy mum of two, but she's a self-care advocate. Rosie has spoken openly about anxiety, especially around the time of the death of her dad. Today, she speaks to me about how much of a great person he was and how she misses him every day. Rosie's mum was diagnosed with breast cancer a couple of years later, and she has some brilliant advice on how to support a sick parent. She thinks women need to put themselves first more often and has some great tips and insights for us today. Rosie is funny, caring, stunningly beautiful and so positive. I feel absolutely blessed that she agreed to come on the Good Glow podcast to tell her story. I hope you enjoy. Rosie, thank you so much for joining me on the Good Glow today.
Thank you for having me. I was a bit shocked when you messaged me because I'm a big, big listener to the podcast. You kind of got me into podcasts, to be honest. I wasn't as into them. I never really found any that I loved and started listening to yours, and you're just this ray of positivity and I love it, absolutely love it. So when you messaged me, I was like, I think my message was like capital letters, yes.
Yeah, it was. And obviously when I first got sick, we got to know each other and you've always been there, and your mum had breast cancer, so yeah. You knew what I was going through, and thank you so much for everything. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I actually look back on my Instagram and it was back in January 2018 was when I first kind of like found your account and was like, oh my god, this girl is amazing, absolutely amazing. I remember like sending your stories to my sister and was like, check out this girl, and I've never seen anyone look so beautiful the whole way through as well. You looked incredible. So
oh my god, thank you.
Yeah, it's great to see you doing so well.
Thanks. And this is the first day we've ever met each other in real life, so it's a lovely full circle moment that we get to sit down now and just have a lovely chat. Remy is beautiful, congratulations. How's life at the moment?
Mad, it's busy, but do you know what, I actually just texted my husband this morning. I was on the way in and I went into the bedroom and the three of them were all asleep, so I had Harry and my husband in the bed and Remy beside in the crib, and I actually felt like bawling crying. I was like, I feel so lucky to just have the two kids and him. We're so happy and they're so healthy, and I mean, it's things like that, just a random morning that you're just heading out to work and it just hits you. And I text him this morning being like, I'm just so lucky and I love having you on my team, and it's amazing. We're absolutely blessed.
You are. And isn't it so lovely that you can appreciate those little moments? Like, I think it almost took me to get cancer and be really sick to kind of just appreciate those little tiny moments. But you've obviously been through so much and nothing has really been too easy for you. Like it's been hard.
Yeah, I mean, from the minute I hit 18, I think life just got quite hard, but I think it changed me for the better and it definitely made me grow up and just see life in a different way. And it's forced our family to become so close. I mean, literally we can read each other. Like, we're just such an open book in our family. Like, there's nothing that goes unsaid. We can tell by a text message if someone's off, and it is just like you ring them straight away and be like, right, what's up? You know, there's no secrets, not that I know of. But yeah, it's kind of forced our family to be really close, which I'm so grateful for.
That's amazing. Your parents split when you were younger, but they always had a good relationship, didn't they?
Yeah, my mum and my dad just adored my mum, and obviously vice versa, but like they were childhood sweethearts and things just didn't work out. And I mean, my dad wasn't well, and I think my mum did what was best for us and for her kids more than for her as in her relationship. She kind of had to put her kids first, and I always thought it was commendable until I had my own kids, and then I realised, you know what, that was heroic what she did, because she just had to put her three daughters before her relationship. And yeah, it was just it was difficult, but I loved the respect that my parents had for each other was incredible. And even with my stepdad, the respect he had and has for my dad was amazing. And like to see that, and for him to always be so kind about my dad and never try and step on anyone's toes. It was really, really respectful. And it's raised me to kind of see that, you know, getting on and being respectful to each other really means so much to the children as well. Whether, no matter how young they are, it's really important.
So when your stepdad came along, you've spoken about how it was amazing to see your mom so happy, and are they just soulmates?
Oh my god, when I look at their relationship, I'm like, they are literally relationship goals. They are absolutely solid. He brings out just a fun side of my mom, and you know, my mom had just a really, really hard life at the start. You know, my dad had a brain hemorrhage when he was 29. My mom was 28. She had two young kids. I wasn't even born yet, and you know, her husband didn't recognize her, didn't know who she was. Their whole relationship changed. Everything changed. He was obviously working full time. Then he couldn't. She had to earn money, raise a family, look after him, bring him to rehab. So like a lot of that was really tough on her. And she had a really hard few years. And I never saw that until afterwards, until I grew up and kind of spoke to her about it and went, you know, I'm older than she was when she went through all of that. And I still feel like a baby. I'm like, I couldn't cope with that. I just couldn't. But she did.
And especially now that you have your kids, that you're like, how would she have coped?
Yeah, like, I think when you have children, you look at your parents in a totally different light. Like, I idolise my mum for what she went through. I'm raising two kids with an amazing husband. Everything, touch wood, is quite plain sailing at the moment. And I still find it tough. So when I look at her and think the struggles that she went through and how much, you know, her life was turned upside down, and she still just got on with it. She fed us. She made sure we were clothed. She made sure we were happy. You know, she did what every mother wants to do for their kids. And I'm in awe of her. I think she's incredible.
Life for your dad changed after the brain hemorrhage, and he had to give up his hobbies and that really affected him.
Yeah. Every time I talk about it,
so difficult.
Every time I talk about my dad, it's quite heartbreaking, because his life he should have had, it just wasn't to be. And he was such a good person and such a kind person, and all from an accident or a brain injury, everything changed. I mean, he used to be really sporty. He had his family, his wife, amazing person, and all of that just
was taken
from him literally within a day, you know. And he had a brain hemorrhage, and then he had a stroke as well after his brain surgery. And I mean, it's scary because I don't know my dad before that. Like, I only know my dad after his injuries and his accident. And he was an incredible dad to me. And my mum obviously had to go back to work, so my dad was left to mind me, and he could barely use his left side from his stroke. He had like very little power, but he had to just get on with it because my mum had no other choice. So he used to be changing my nappy, my mum was saying, like, with one hand, and he just got on with it. He was just so strong. But it's sad because I don't think he ever, even my mum says, like, he was just never the same person. And she lost her husband the day he had his brain hemorrhage, and that's hard for them.
There's a girl that I work with who is friends with your bigger sister.
Yes, yeah, Fiona.
Kim was saying to me yesterday that she has really clear memories of your dad, because your dad used to pick them all up from school.
Yeah.
And Kim said he was just a gorgeous person.
Yeah, he was so friendly. I mean, no one had, anyone that I spoke to after he passed away was just like, your dad was the kindest person. He never, no matter who it was, had anything bad to say about them. He would always say, ah, no, but you know, he's this, or maybe he's a hard life, you know. He always saw the positive in everything, and considering everything he went through in life, I think to have that outlook is just phenomenal. And I'm you know, I'm so lucky that I had him in my life. Obviously, I was 18 when he passed away, but I mean, I got 18 years with him, and he was just our world. And I feel I regret that, or I hate that we don't have that chance now when we're older to be able to mind him the way I would have loved to when we were 18. Like, I was 18, I couldn't do what I wanted to do for him and help him out. But I feel like if he was still here now, we'd be able to do what we would have loved to do for him and help him out and really get him the help he needed. But obviously that wasn't meant to be. So,
and how did you find the grief process? That's like 18 is such a hard age.
And I think, you know, you think you know it all at 18. And I thought I was like super grown up. And I mean, that's now how many years ago? 11 years ago. And I was a baby. I mean, I hadn't a clue what was going on in life. And we were, when he passed away, my mum and my stepdad were away. So we were left to deal with, you know, looking for him. He was missing for about 24 hours. And we had to go to the police station. We had to give in pictures. We had to go around looking for him. And that part was really hard, because you'd feel like you need to be protected from that, but then we also were like, we need to step up here because there's no one else to do it. And to see, you know, to see my sisters so upset and so distraught is just, you'd never want to see your siblings in that situation either. Now, we had amazing support around us from my dad's side of the family and my mum's side of the family. You know, they were all incredible. But that grief never leaves you. It just never leaves you. And I think you learn, obviously you learn to live without that person, but I don't think, it just totally changes you. And that's when my anxiety all started, because, you know, I know you've spoken about the fear of dying, and my fear is of losing people close to me and people that I love. And I constantly have that fear. You know, I every day I'm like, things are too good to be true. You know, they can be just taken from you at any stage. And that's terrifying. And I don't think that's ever left me. And the more people that come into my life and the more people I love and my children, the bigger that fear becomes, because you're like, I can't bear the thoughts of not having them, or waking up one morning and that being taken away from you, because I've felt that before.
Yeah, and I totally understand what you're saying. And even on good days, you're like, I wish I could give myself 100% to this, but I'm still just so a little bit of scared.
Yeah.
We're all a little bit scared.
Yeah, and it is. It's like you just kind of, I'm always waiting for the next tragedy, because I felt like for years our whole family was just marred with this tragedy all the time. It was like one thing after another, losing people being sick. And I remember thinking, is this just how life is going to be now? You know, is this just going to be, you just wait and wait and wait? And it was that nervous energy and that anxiety thinking, what's next? And I mean, I'm learning now to just try and live in the moment and to try and appreciate what you have and what's in front of you, because otherwise you spend your whole life just worrying about what possibly could happen, and we've no control over it. So
we lost Jamie's dad a couple of years ago, and I have both my parents and my stepdad. I've never gone through losing a parent, but I don't think it wasn't until I saw Jamie lose a parent that I realised like how big it is. Like it is just enormous.
Yeah.
And as losing Jamie's dad has left such a hole in all of our lives.
Yeah.
And people say, like, you know, does it get easier with time? I think it kind of becomes more normal, but it's not easier.
No, it's a new normal, I think, but it's not a normal you want to be in. You know, it's like all the life events, having children, getting married, all of those things. It just hits home that I'm like, there's somebody missing here. Like, there's always that person missing. And that never got easier. I mean, I got married last year and I thought, you know, 10 years later, it might get easier. And it didn't. It really didn't. I mean, I like really missed my dad on my wedding day, and I was blessed to have my stepdad walk me up the aisle. I'm so lucky to have the two of them, and if my dad was here, I probably would have walked up with both of them because they're so close to me. And I mean, like, I am so lucky to have a figure like that in my life, but there is still a huge part missing. And I think my mum feels that as well, you know, when she's looking at all the grandkids. My dad, you know, there's how many grandkids now? 7 in the family. And my mum's like, you know, he never got to meet any of them. He never got to become a granddad and meet any of these grandkids. So she feels that he's missed out on so much. And I know that hurts her, and it also hurts obviously all of us as well. It's never easy. And I try not to bring him up too much, because the minute I mention him or think about his face, I just break down every time.
But he lives on through all of you, I'm sure, every single day. Talk to me about Billy, because you say, you know, he's brought so much joy to your life. He minds Harry.
Yeah.
He's just been amazing.
Oh, he's like the centre of our family. He was that kind of lighthearted, fun person that just walked into our lives and lit my mum's life up, which then in turn made us so happy. I mean, all you want is to look at your mum and think, look how happy she is. I mean, I've never seen her as happy. And obviously, he came in at such a hard time. You know, my mum was going through a tough time for a couple of years. We were all over the place. I mean, my sister decided, she was just like, no, I'm going to give him the cold shoulder. Didn't want to, you know, give him a chance for a while. Yeah, so it took a while for him to settle in. Now, I adored him. I was nine when I met him. And so he's been in my life like 20 years. And he's just, he's, he's like having a best friend. He's never taken that role of being my dad. You know, he'd never discipline us, or not that I'd have to be disciplined at 29, but he'd never like correct us. He'd always kind of go, you know, what's going on? And he'd sit down, and if you told him something in confidence, he wouldn't go and tell my mum. Or he was just very supportive, and he always has been. And then through us, he never had children of his own. So like then seeing him with grandkids, it's like it was a whole new him. Mm-hmm. It's like he got that chance to be with the kids, and he's like, he's literally, the kids are absolutely obsessed with him. Every single one of them are just obsessed with him, and he's so good with them. He spends a lot of time with Harry, a lot of time with Remy. And we're just so blessed to have him. I mean, I obviously didn't realise how much of a big part of my life he was going to become. But and then to see him, you know, support my mum through her one of her toughest times. And it broke him too. I mean, it to see him so heartbroken over my mum was horrible. But they did it together. They got through it together. And yeah, they're blessed to have each other. And we're absolutely blessed to have the two of them as well.
Your mum had breast cancer, and I think that's why, or how you could understand what I was maybe going through a couple of years ago. What was that, just the shock of your lives?
Yeah, it really, really, like, I mean, you know, when you look at your mum and you just think she's invincible, and I knew she'd been through so much, and she soldiered on, and she just always got on with it. And then the cancer diagnosis came, and it was like, oh, you know, she can't just go, no, like, I'm just going to do it. She had to, you know, fight it and really fight it hard. And just the thoughts of even her going through chemotherapy, and I know like it's so trivial, but losing her hair and seeing her so sick, because I've always seen her as so strong. Like, you know, everything that she went through was quite emotional. She never went through a, you know, physical illness before, and she's the center of our world. And obviously having lost one parent, you know, you put everything into your other parent. And obviously, we were that bit older as well, but she still tried to protect us and tried to, you know, put on a brave face and, you know, I'm fine. And eventually, as the treatment went on, you could see her getting weaker, you know, from being so fed up and how hard chemotherapy is. Like, regardless of what your cancer is, I think chemotherapy is just one of the most horrible things to have to go through or see someone you love go through. And, you know, it was actually their wedding anniversary, herself and my stepdad, and she was starting, her hair was starting to fall out. So on their wedding anniversary, we have pictures of them. They just both decided to shave their head. So he shaved hers and she shaved his. And he said, I'm going to stay bald as long as you're bald, and so that we'll go do this together. And he was like, no one will know who has the cancer then. So the two of them he used to wear bandanas on his head when she did. You know, they were literally like two peas in a pod. Now, he didn't have much hair to begin with, but he still shaved his head. And it was just that kind of, he brought so much fun to her, to such hard situations. You know, he was messing with her and shaving her head funny when they were doing it, and leaving her with a mohawk and just trying to cheer her up. And I remember after her surgery, she didn't want to see, you know, herself after everything went through. So he went and put newspaper up all over every single mirror in our house until she was ready to see anything, because he was, you know, he didn't want her to accidentally see anything. And it's just an awful thing to go through, and you need that support. And I think he was just an absolute rock for her. And that's not to say he didn't find it tough as well. I mean, It's he put on a brave face, but he definitely struggled with the two. And we all did. We all put on a brave face for mum and then left and bawled our eyes out crying, you know. But seeing her doing so well now, it's just, if I thought I idolised her before, she's just on another level now to me. She's just incredible.
With my cancer diagnosis, like, people always ask me, my parent has gotten cancer, like, what can I do? I'm absolutely freaking out. And it's so hard for me to answer that question, and you would probably be able to answer it better. But like, what did you do for your mom?
I suppose, I think everyone needs to be as honest as possible. Like, you cannot always be strong, and same to the person going through it, you can't always be strong all the time. So just even to sit with them and like let them cry and cry with them, you know, instead of trying to be like, it's okay and putting on a brave face. You know, we all know how hard it is. So cry with them, have that cry together, talk about how hard it is. And then little things, like silly things. I used to go and buy her new pajamas and get her really fancy ones when she was going into the hospital, and pack them away from her so she'd feel a little bit nicer. And, you know, I know that's not going to help in the long run, but it's just those little pick me ups. And I think spending time with people when they're not well, because it's not easy. Like, she, there was days she never got out of bed, and you know, we're living our lives, we were young. I actually met my husband when my mum was sick, so I was dating, and I was like, you know, that part of my life was going so well, and it was like, you know, the honeymoon phase. And then I'd go home and my mum was so ill, and it was those two, I was living like two separate lives. But to give the person that time and just sit with them and just have a good cry sometimes, and then, you know, have a bit of humour. My mum kept her humour throughout the whole thing, and so did my, that's, my stepdad is amazing, he's a great sense of humour, and you know, as well as they could, they really did keep their sense of humour as much as they possibly could, and laugh when you can. You can't laugh every day when you're going through that, but if you can have a laugh, you know, really does help. But I think just being there for that person, supporting them, ringing them every day, even if they say they don't want to see anyone, go anyway, you know, just be there, don't ask, just go, because they're always going to say, no, you go about your day,
go on,
you
yeah.
know, because
yeah.
I know she probably felt like a burden some days, that she's like, oh, you know, I'm the one at home sick, it's the middle of the summer, they want to be out enjoying their lives, you know, they're young. But don't ask, just go, because I knew deep down every time we, you know, we sat with her on the bed for hours, it really helped her. And she'd always text afterwards and be like, you know, I really loved that day, or, you know, I love spending time together. So I feel like, it, you know, it's the martyr in a lot of people when they're sick, is to be like, no, I'm fine. You know, you go about your day, but, you know, just show up and be there for them, even when they don't ask you to be.
Was there, do you remember the moment when it was over, when she kind of got her life back?
Yeah, I suppose obviously it took, you know, a long time. She had different treatments, so her chemo ended, but she still had more treatment ahead of her. And I think it was when I started to see her going out more, you know, meeting her friends. And then she started to do mad things like, she's like, I'm going to do the dip in the nip.
Yes.
On the beat. And I was like, what? She goes, yeah, I'm going to do it, I don't care. And it was all this newfound like madness in her. She's like, I want to do rock climbing, I want to do, I was like, ma'am, calm down, what's going on here?
Isn't it so mad that it's, and it's all outdoor stuff. I was the
yeah,
same
nature, being outside. And I was like, ma'am, are you really going to strip off and run into the sea? She's like, I will, yeah, I will. And she loved it, and it was just seeing her get her life back. And she actually got it back in a way that she never had before. I mean, she has this wild sense in her now that she never had. She was always quite anxious. Like, I get it from her. We're all a really anxious family, and we're very nervous and cautious. And, you know, we wouldn't be that really wild, carefree type of people. I'm speaking obviously for myself, but I feel like my mum wasn't either until the cancer diagnosis. Now you'd say to her, do you want to do a bungee jump? And she'd say, yeah. And I'm like, I'd love that sense of madness too. But it's just seeing her, you know, going out and enjoying herself. And actually my wedding, my sister's wedding. She was starting to get her hair back, and obviously it was like only quite short, and it was grey, you know, when it grew back. But just seeing her getting glammed up again, and she just started to look like herself again. But I think it was more the sense of freedom that she felt like she had, and that she'd gotten her life, like a new life back. And she just lives it every single day to the fullest. Like I was saying to you earlier on, I cannot even get her to babysit half the time. I have to book her about a month in advance because she's just has such a wild social schedule. But I'm like, do you know what, that is the way to live, because she knows how short life is. And sometimes, you know, she'll say to us, go out, you know, I'm saying, you know, I've only had Remy or whatever, and I don't want to be leaving her. And she's like, you know, what's a few hours, go out with your husband, go on a date, you know, live your life, because before you know it, you just blink and things can change. So she really encourages us all to just be as mad and be as wild as we can in a controlled way, obviously.
Because that's with my podcast with Alison Canavan. She said, you know, it's all very easy to say no, and we're kind of being encouraged to say no to things more now. But what are we not saying yes to? Are we not saying yes to that yoga class we promised ourselves we do? Are we not saying yes when the girls are meeting up for lunch?
Yeah.
Because especially when you have a baby, like, I just wanted to lock my doors and never leave again.
And sometimes, like, especially if your friends don't have kids, you nearly feel like they're asking you, but you're a bit of a burden, and you're like, oh no, they're asking, but they're probably hoping I say no because I'll have the kids in tow and it'll be madness. I'll probably be late, and it's all a bit mad. But yeah, you do have to just sometimes say yes. I get like that, especially with anxiety. Sometimes it just makes you want to just curl up in your house and say no to everything. And I find every time I push myself and I go, I'm like, why didn't I do that more often? You know, I feel it kind of boosts your confidence every time. And you know, spending some time with people that you maybe haven't seen in a while, or, you know, particularly spending time with the girls when you're so involved in family life. Like, my family life, my husband and my two kids are just my world, and I spend majority of my time with them. So to kind of get that little bit of time away, you know, from your partner and say, you know, I'm going to see the girls. Obviously, I would love to see the girls every day, but it's just really hard to just logistically to get that spare time. But if you're invited, you know, do try and say yes and try not back out if it is maybe anxiety or a really busy life that's stopping you. Because as I said, life's too short, and you'll look back and go, God, where did those years go, you know, and where did those friends go? Because, you know, they'll only keep asking you so many times, and all of a sudden the texts stop coming, and you know, you can only ask people to join you, you know, a certain amount of times before people kind of think, oh, maybe she doesn't want to. And I remember going through that, where it's like, no, I'm more of a burden than anything else. I'm just the mom now, you know. I don't have anything exciting to talk about. I'm literally just like, you know, up to my eyes with kids now. And and they're not like that at all. My friends are amazing, and they're always like, bring the kids, bring Remy, we're dying to see her. And I'm always like, are they just saying that now, or do they actually want? But they're amazing, they're amazing. Well, you just have to say yes sometimes to things like that.
Do you wake up some days and you're just anxious, and it's a kind of anxious day?
Yeah, there's some days I just can't, you know, pinpoint why I'm anxious. Those days are a lot less now, thank God. It was kind of after I had Harry, I struggled a good bit, because obviously life changed so much for me, and I had this newfound fear because I had now had a child, and I'd never had that love before. It's a totally different love to any love you'll ever experience. And with that came fear of losing them, or fear of something happening to me, or fear.
And then you just don't want to leave them. No. Because what happens if I leave them?
Exactly. Yeah, you're like this, you know. Yeah, and I think there was a whole new anxiety for me. You know, before, my anxiety would have been around social situations and being out and having a panic attack, or losing my parents or losing my sisters. But this was like, oh no, a child is on a whole nother level. And it brought a huge sense of responsibility, but also fear that, you know, if anything happens to him, I am responsible. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter who's with him, I'm responsible. And that was scary to kind of adjust to. Luckily, this time around with Remy, I'm a lot more relaxed. I just kind of feel like, listen, I've gotten Harry to this stage. He's four now. He's fine. He's had one broken leg. Other than that, he's fine. I'm just a lot more relaxed, and I'm enjoying it a lot more. And I'm kind of, I trust my instinct as a mother a bit more this time. I think when I had Harry, I was a lot more trying to kind of prove myself. You know, I was young. I wasn't married. And I was like, you know, I need to prove myself as a mother. And maybe people are doubting me. I need to prove them wrong. And no one was doubting me. I just had that in my head. And this time I'm like, do you know what? I am a good mum. I know I'm a good mother. And I can do this. I can get past those tough few years. Like, it is difficult at the start, and when they're not sleeping and stuff, it is hard. But I know it's short lived, and now I know there's a light at the end of the tunnel. So I'm really trying to enjoy every moment with Remy and really trust my instinct as a mother, because that's all you can do as a mum, is just trust your gut and just do what feels right for you and for your kids. And I'm definitely, my anxious days are a lot less. Obviously, you know, different things will make me worse, you know, if anyone's sick in the family, or, you know, if anyone has a health scare, things like that, they're hard to get past. You know, you'll just wake up anxious and you're like, oh, I don't know why I'm anxious. And then you think, okay, in the back of my mind, I'm worrying about X, Y, Z. And I'm a worrier. I worry about everything. I worry about the wind. Like, my husband literally says to me, he's like, you worry about, like, the direction of the wind, honest to God. If you don't have something to worry about, you'll find it. And I'm trying to get less of a worrier. It's hard.
And how do you manage it then? What do you have, a number of things that you can do?
I'm lucky because my husband kind of just like will say to me, will you stop? You know, it's ridiculous. You're worrying about nothing. And I try and listen to like podcasts like yourself, like things that just, people that are positive and that are open about their struggles, but kind of go, you know what, you know, we can get past it. I find other people help me to snap out of that mind frame. If I'm sitting with another worrier, we will worry our lives away. So I'm so lucky that my husband's not a worrier at all. He is so calm and he doesn't panic. So thank God, because if he did, we would just sit at home and be writing out all the things we're worried about and we'd never get on with life. So it's really, I surround myself with people that are a little bit more you know, positive than me, and it just rubs off on me. I feel like misery loves company, and I try to stick with people that make me feel positive and make me go, do you know what? Yeah, you're right. That's silly. You shouldn't be worrying about that. And I think it comes with age and experience as well. You know, I've worried about so many things happening and they haven't happened. So I'm kind of like, okay, well, you know, the law of, you know, the averages means that it probably won't happen, and I probably should stop worrying about it.
Yeah, because anxiety is worrying about things that haven't happened yet.
Yeah.
And when I realised that's what anxiety was, because I didn't really know what it was.
Yeah.
And then when I realised, I was like, oh yeah, I'm just...
It's simple when you actually think about it like that. You really don't have to worry. And actually worrying makes absolutely no difference to what is going to happen or won't happen. Now I say that, and as I say that to you, I can give the best advice, but when I'm in it, I don't listen to my own advice. You know what I mean? I see myself texting the girls sometimes if anyone's worried or stressed, and I will give them the best advice possible. But when the table turns, will I listen to that? Sometimes I don't. It's harder to do when you're in it. And it's, you know, it's easy for someone who's in a good mind frame to say, oh, you know, just don't worry about it. But when you're in it, someone saying that, it's like, and it's not that easy to just not worry, you know. And it's like training your mind to stop doing something that you've probably done for years. So it is difficult. And I think it takes practice, like anything to do with the mind. You really need to practice it daily in order for it to become more of a routine, to stop doing these bad habits, as I call them. They're like my bad habits of worrying.
You seem so popular within the blogging industry. You've got a lot of friends. What's it like for anyone looking in, like, what's it like? Because it seems, well, I said this at the Gossies, that I was supported by so many people in the room. People, when I got sick, were reaching out to me and being really nice to me, and I was like, whoa, like, everyone is actually so nice in this industry. Do you find that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether I'm just lucky, and the people that I've met have been amazing. Like, I don't have any bad stories, or, you know, oh my God, you know, I can't believe so-and-so was awful. Like, everyone I've met has been lovely. And I think the only reason people think it's any different is that it's just prejudged like that. And don't get me wrong, we all judge people on, you know, what we see, and probably judge a book by its cover. We all do it, and we're all guilty of that. But, you know, the amount of times people have met, say, my sister, and go, God, I thought Rosie was going to be totally different. She's like, what did you think she was going to be?
Yeah.
You know, it's because I find it's sometimes hard to get your personality across when you're just on the phone all the time. And I said this recently. I was doing a talk with Image Magazine, and I was saying how I actually have a bit of a mad sense of humour, but I don't put that across online because I feel like it doesn't come across. And it's very hard to be funny when you're just looking at yourself on a screen. Whereas in person, I'd have great banter with people, and I'd have a good, and that's what people usually say to me, is like, God, you're way better sense of humour than I thought you'd had. I'm like, wow, okay, I don't know whether to take that as an insult or not. But I've been really, really lucky in the sense of, like, anyone in the industry that I've met have been incredibly supportive. You know, we all text each other, kind of bounce things off each other. They're like my colleagues, because if I'm working with a brand or I'm working on something, it's hard to kind of talk to someone and go, what do you feel about that, if they're not in it, you know? So for me, you know, there's so many times I've messaged other bloggers within the industry and go, come here, I need a bit of help with this. Like, what would you do? And they've never done anything other than kind of steer me in the right direction. So I've been very lucky. And I think people would love to think that it was all very, you know, clicky and, you know, not as nice as it is, but maybe I have my rose tinted glasses on, but I found the industry amazing, and I've had some, you know, amazing friends through the industry. So I've been very lucky, and I think it is actually, you know, a lot nicer than people imagine.
You're very real. Do you think that's why people connect with you?
I look at my Instagram grid as my, you know, my job. That's my work. That's my, I try and keep that really professional. But then my stories, I feel like, is kind of a little bit more me and a little bit more unpolished and a bit more real life. I try and kind of separate the two, because I feel like you can get personality across better on stories than you can on an image. And I think, yeah, I just feel like it's one of those things, you have to be as real as possible, but also don't just try and be really real just so that people like you. You know, that way you shouldn't do it for like, oh, if I do this, I'm going to get loads of likes, or if I do this, people are going to like me more. I just don't worry about people liking me anymore. I'm like, if they like me, they like me. If they don't, they don't. You're never going to be everyone's cup of tea, and you're always going to find people that just don't enjoy what you do, or don't enjoy how you talk or how you look, and that's fine. You know, over the years, it's just, I've learned that that's absolutely okay. There's people that aren't for me online, and I just don't follow them. And, you know, I surround myself with people that I do like. But I feel like I try and, when I'm looking at my social media and putting things across, I just try and do it as organically and as myself as possible, and not worry about, oh, will this get more likes, or will I say this because this is, you know, what people want to hear. Because I think that's when you lose your integrity and you become a robot on social media, and there's no personality behind it. You have to just stay true to yourself. And if you're having a bad day and you want to go on and talk about it, then do it. If you're having a bad day and you actually want to get off social media, then do that too. You know, whatever feels right for you. There's some days when I'm like, you know, oh, I really am having a bad day, but I don't want to go on and have a moan either, because God, if I was having a bad day and clicked in and listened to someone else moaning, I'd be like, jeez, this day is getting worse. So there's times when I will go on and, you know, say, oh, I'm having a tough day, and then there's days when I'm like, I'm just going to keep my negativity to myself instead of spreading that around, because you know those days when you're just you know that even in being someone's company, I'm like, you don't want to be around me today, because I'm just going to drag your mood down. And they're the days I just try and kind of just get my head down, do something that makes me happy, have a bath, read a magazine, and then wake up fresh the next day.
And what does your like me time look like? What's your self-care routine?
I love nothing more than having a bit of time to like try on clothes and like, you know, like I'll go up to my room, I might have bought a few bits, and like just having a minute without the kids hanging out of you to just try on different outfits, maybe plan a few outfits for the week. Like I get such a kick out of that because I love fashion. And then my favourite me time is that time before, if we're going out for dinner or we're going out on a date night, doing your makeup in peace and not rushed and not on the clock. And, you know, I'll have a glass of wine, I'll do my makeup, I'll have my music, but I usually have a Little Mix or something blaring, some cheesy music. Love it. And it's that hour or two that is just pure heaven. And my husband knows that, like, I will go out in the best form if I have that. Sometimes I nearly enjoy that more than actually going out. But having that little bit of time, or if it's in the evening time, having a bath and sticking a face mask on, and I put YouTube on or a podcast or something in the bathroom, and it could be 20 minutes, but it's that 20 minutes, and I'll hike the volume up if I can hear the kids downstairs. I'll hike the volume up so I can't hear them, and it's just that few minutes of like, oh, you know, just relax. But it's whatever me time looks like to you, it's so important, whether that's going out for a walk, whether it's going to the gym for half an hour. Like, that's probably as long as I could manage in the gym if I was to do it, so that's why I say half an hour. But like, you have to just have that time for yourself. It's so important for you, it's important for your relationships, you know, whether it be with your friends, with your partner. You need that time on your own in order to kind of live your best life.
And are you good at handing the kids over? Like, you able to do that?
Oh yes, yeah. I'm better now. With Harry, it was really difficult because you had that control, and it was, you know, worrying about, no one can do it like mom, you know, like no one can mind him the way I do. And then I remember we actually went away, myself and my husband, and I came back and he was potty trained. My mum had potty trained him in one weekend, and I had struggled. I'm not joking. He was about 3 and a half and I could not train him. And I came back, we were away for 2 nights, and my mum was like, just so you know, he's potty trained, he hasn't had an accident all weekend. And I remember thinking, okay, maybe I'm not always the best at everything, and you know, sometimes other people are great with your kids, and it's okay to have that time away. So now with Remy, you know, I've probably been out 3 or 4 times since she's born. She's only 3 months old, and I don't feel guilt over that. I think it's really important, and if you can hand them over, and they're only ever with grandparents, but if you can do that, then do it, because there's no shame in it. You need that time, you know, whether it be with your friends, with your husband, you need that little bit of me time. And I'm a better mum when I look after myself, and that's so important.
And I think people are really starting to see this. Like, yeah. I get so many messages all the time. I got this message from a girl once, and she listened to my podcast, and her dad was sick, and she's got 3 kids, and she said, after I listened to your podcast, I went into the shower, I locked my bathroom door first.
Yeah, which very is important. The key.
She locked the bathroom door, and she had a shower for 40 minutes, and she said, I just enjoyed every second of it. And I was like, this is the reason I created my podcast, just because when I had had a baby, I didn't know that all of this was okay to do. So it's lovely for people to be reminded that, yes, you do need time for yourself.
Yeah. And it should be guilt free. You know, you shouldn't be made feel guilty. And also, it's not, you know, it's mums and dads. I do think that dads nowadays, that, you know, there's a lot on them to kind of be picking up the pieces too. And I know my husband's very hands on with kids, but he also needs time. You know, he'll have his time to go to the gym. And it's, as parents, I think you definitely need that time just to yourself to look after yourself. And there's absolutely no shame in that. And there should be absolutely no guilt. You know, I think it's actually selfless to mind yourself in order for you to be able to be the best, whether it's partner, mom, sister, brother, whatever it is. You need to look after yourself first, because as they say, you can't pour from an empty cup. So you have to really, really mind yourself.
Rosie, thank you so much for being so honest today and for sharing your story with me and for giving out such amazing advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, made possible by Sally Hansen. To discover more, you can shop the products in Macaulay Health and Beauty Pharmacies and other stores across the country now. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new ones. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. To all my listeners in Ireland and those of you around the world, thank you for the amazing support and continued feedback. You can find out more about my story on thegoodglow.ie and follow me on Instagram at Georgie.Crawford.